Well, about 2.5 or 3 years ago, I started working on a sermon topic, but I never actually gave the sermon. Instead, I actually wrote an article for the United News that was entitled, "The Importance of Our Words." I began the article by sharing one of the earliest phrases I had ever remember being taught to me by my parents, one that you may have heard from your parents, one that if you're a parent, you probably have actually said to your children, and it was, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." I've often thought that might be one of the first lies a parent ever tells their child, because words do hurt, right? There's sometimes the things that are said to people are very painful. It is an idiom that is used to help children cope with verbal attacks. Is basically what it is. You know, those unpleasant words, the name-calling, mocking, all those things that kids do to other kids, it's just cruel. And, you know, I hate to just say, well, it's part of growing up, but unfortunately it is part of growing up. Everybody has to go through that, unfortunately, and learn to cope with it and deal with it. But as I said, and I wrote in that article, that it's an idiom that's expressed to try to help us deal with this hurt that comes from it. And I think we all realize, though, that in one sense that hurt can be longer lasting than a broken bone. You know, broken bones will heal. And sometimes the emotional scars from things that are said, some people never really recover from them. No one seems to know where the phrase came from. As I was writing that article, I tried to look it up, and the earliest known source I was able to find was the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And in there, they had a publication called The Christian Recorder, and in 1862, it states, quote, "Remember the old adage, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never harm me." But even that publication simply says, "Remember the adage." So we still don't really know where it came from. But that was the earliest source I could find. And again, while it is a cute idiom in one sense to try to help a child deal with hurt that comes from name calling and things that are said, as I mentioned, you know, those type of wounds often can last a person's lifetime. Some people never recover from things that have been said about them or teasing or other things they've gone through. It is amazing the impact a spoken word can have on our lives. It really truly is. The power of the words that we use reside in the meaning behind those words and the manner in which it's delivered. Right? You can say a phrase one way and it has one meaning. You can say it a same exact phrase with a completely different emphasis or in a different manner and it has a completely different meaning. Join me in Proverbs 18. God's word has much to say about the use and the misuse of our tongues, the words that we speak. Notice Proverbs 18. Yeah, I had been going back through some old files a couple weeks ago, actually about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I came across this unfinished sermon that Proverbs 18, verse 21, that's 19. "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." You know, life eternal or death, you know, lake of fire, are the results of the words that we speak. So the words that we use have consequences to them. Notice what James writes over in James 1, James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 19. "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. You know, in essence, what he says is we should all listen a lot more and speak a lot less. You know, I bet if we all pause and just look back in our lives and think of situations we've gotten ourselves into, maybe relationships that went a little sideways, we might be able to bring it down to something that was said that shouldn't have been said, or a statement that was misunderstood, it was taken out of context, or what have you. But his emphasis here is that we would listen a little bit more and speak maybe a lot less. Verse 21, therefore lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does. Verse 26, if anyone among you thinks he's religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. The word for useless there is vain, empty, void, literally profitless. If we can't control what we say, the words that we use and how we use them, he said, your religion is useless. It's void. It's profits nothing. And so words matter. Words are important. Dr. Brewster Higley of Smith County, Kansas, wrote a poem titled My Western Home, somewhere between 1871 and 1873. By 1910, the publication, in a publication of sheet music entitled Cowboy Songs and Other Frontier Ballads, only the first verse and the refrain remained, and it's a well-known piece of music now, because this part of the poem set to music is often referred to as a, quote, unofficial anthem of the American West. Its title, Home on the Range. The first stanza I'd like to just read. I'm not going to sing. I love you too much to sing to you. It says, oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam. The chorus changes it to home, home on the range. Where the deer and the antelope play. You probably know where I'm going next, right? Where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Right now, you're probably humming it, right? We could probably do a sing-along right now. We won't. What's most interesting about those, four lines is that three of them refer to the state of nature surrounding him as he wrote this poem, and the other one actually has to do with the behavior of people. So he painted an illustration of what it was like where he lived, and he brought in the fact that seldom is heard a discouraging word. And so today I'd like to go through some of the passages of the Bible and see what God's word teaches us about the words that we use and how we use them, the impact that they have on ourselves and others. I've titled the sermon simply, Words Matter. Words matter. Again, the words we use, the tone in which we use them, the volume in which we state them, and how they're delivered can communicate many things. They could be beneficial, they could be life-giving, they could be seasoned with grace, with mercy, with love and tenderness and forgiveness. They can build people up. Our words can encourage people. Our words can praise people. It can strengthen them. It can comfort them. Unfortunately, the reverse is also true. The words that we use, along with the tone and the volume of that delivery, or maybe an innuendo that's attached to it, can destroy people. It can destroy their character, can destroy their reputation, damage their self-esteem. Again, as I said, there are people, grown adults who still struggle in life because of something that was said when they were a child. and they can't get past it. Our words can be, I like to use the phrase, a footstool to lift people up or a stumbling block for them to trip over, right? If we just keep it that simple. And what would we rather be, right? A footstool helping to lift people up as opposed to a stumbling block that they would be tripping over. Our words that we deliver can strive to bring unity. They can bring peace. They can bring harmony, or they can sow discord. That's the first thing we're going to look at. I've got three or four points that we're going to go through today. The first one is sowing discord. Let's go to Proverbs 6. This is one of the downsides. We're going to look at some downsides to our speech. Familiar passage. We've gone through this in other sermons. We've touched on it in the past. So very familiar in Proverbs chapter 6. We're going to begin, in verse 12. Solomon writes of the characteristic of a worthless and wicked person in Proverbs 6, beginning in verse 12. A worthless person, a wicked man. You can't get any more descriptive than that. He just spells it right out there. He's going to list seven attributes of this worthless person, wicked man. Right? He walks with a perverse mouth. He winks with his eyes. He shuffles his feet. He points with his fingers. Perversity is in his heart. He devises evil continually. He sows discord. Now, those are the seven characteristics that he listed. The first one, walking with a perverse mouth. The last one, sowing discord. Right? Those were the seven. Therefore, his calamity shall come suddenly, and suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. And then he continues to list these six things the Lord hates. Yea, seven are an abomination to him. And he's going to list these seven items here in the verses that follow. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and number seven, one who sows discord among brethren. You know, if you look at this list carefully, that three of the seven in this last group all involve the improper use of words, right? A lying tongue. Remember, there's the false witness who speaks lies, and the seventh being one who sows discord. So of those seven things listed here, three of them involve our mouths and the improper use of things that we say. You know, as I've mentioned in the past, a critical thing to remember here is sowing discord is not limited to something or someone who's engaged in a regular active process of sowing discord. You know, years ago I used to think that. I had this view of sowing in the field, of like hoeing the ground, and that's not at all what the word means here. That was what I thought it meant. The Hebrew word for sows is selah, which means to send forth. To send away, to let loose, or to shoot forth. Right? It's a singular act. So again, sowing discord is not limited to somebody who's actively engaged in continuously doing it. That word selah has the image of launching or sending on its way. It has more of a singular act than an ongoing act. It's the same word that's used in other places in the Bible. It was used to describe Jonathan shooting an arrow. And we said to David, if it lands, I'll fire it, and when it goes to your side, right? And back in 1 Samuel 20, I believe. And the Hebrew word for discord is madon, which means strife or dissension. And it refers to a quarrel or a dispute that can't be stopped once it's started. That's Zodiety's word study of the New Testament, or the Old Testament. A quarrel or dispute that cannot be stopped once it's started. So when you put these two words together, you begin to get the image of any one of us who in a singular act launches something that once it starts can't be stopped. And we can all do this if we're not careful. You and I could be having a conversation about something, and somebody could walk by and hear one phrase of a conversation and it launches something, right? Because of a singular statement. It's not limited to somebody who's actively and ongoingly trying to stir up trouble. It could be one simple, single statement about somebody or something or what have you. And the end result is it has launched on its way a dispute that can't be stopped. We have sown discord. You know, sometimes people that, you know, there are those that deliberately like to churn things up. You've probably met them in your life. Sometimes you see them at work. You know, they're the water cooler gossip person that's just always churning. They're constantly got something to, and after a while you begin to realize, just too much negativity for me. I don't want to be around this person anymore. But they're always, you know, like I said, and after a while you begin to know who they are. That's what their intended purpose is. They want to foment and cause, you know, discord or disruption. Other people, I think, and maybe most often people unintentionally are responsible for doing it. Like I said, it's just in the course of a conversation, a statement is made, and the end result is it causes discord. It causes unrest. But whether it's deliberate or whether it's intentional, you know, that person is now accountable to God for launching on its way something that, whether they intended to do it or not, they're now accountable for. And so we all have to be careful when it comes to this particular item to make sure that we're not doing something that could have that effect. I was talking with Mr. Wilson before services and how, you know, there's times in our conversations that we, you know, two people may have a conversation as friends that they might not have with somebody else simply because they don't want it. You know, maybe it's a point of scripture. We're going to talk about something where I think it says this, but could it say that, right? There's nothing wrong with two friends having a conversation like that, right? You're just talking and sort of fleshing out an idea. But we have to be careful that if a new person comes along and they hear that, you know, and they can't handle that, you know, you put a stumbling block in front of them. And we were just talking about how, you know, we all need to be very mindful of being careful of what we say around individuals so that we don't cause that to happen. Mr. Wilson's always been good at that. In fact, I complimented him on that. That to just be able to have that, I'll use the word wisdom and discernment, that something that me and another person may talk about, I might not have that same conversation with somebody else. Because, again, you don't want to put a stumbling block. We don't want to sow discord. So we need to be very careful with every word that we speak and who's in earshot of it. Which brings me to the second one, is gossip. So we touched on sowing discord. Let's touch on gossip. The Hebrew word that's translated gossip in the Old Testament is defined as, quote, one who reveals secrets, one who goes about as a talebearer or a scandalmonger. It refers to spreading rumors or falsities about someone. It is almost always used in a negative manner. Now, if you want to get really technical, right, a tale bearer, you know, could be somebody that's literally telling the truth about an event. But as you'll see here, you know, sometimes even if something is true, it doesn't need to be said, right? But as Leviticus 19, we see that from the very beginning, this was prohibited. God does not want us to be gossips. Leviticus 19. If there's one area where I think people make excuses for themselves is, well, everything I'm saying is true. Okay, but should it be said? I mean, it may be true, and you'll see as I dig into this point of the topic a little bit when I'm talking about Leviticus 19, verse 16. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. I mean, it couldn't be any clearer. Don't be a talebearer. Don't go around being a gossip. The word here is talebearer. And as I said, it could actually be telling something true. The story that you're telling, that you're bearing, could all be completely true. In fact, it probably is true. Otherwise, I think the word that might be used here would be, don't go around being a liar, right? So, but the point is, don't go around just being a gossip, telling tales of different people. You know, anyone can engage in gossip by repeating something that was heard in confidence, or something that, you know, you may uniquely know about, and you just can't keep your mouth shut, and you just feel like you have to go around telling everyone. You know, the book of Proverbs has a long list of verses that covers this danger. Let's go to Proverbs 11, because there's a tremendous amount of hurt that comes about from being a gossip. Proverbs 11. Proverbs 11, look at verse 12 and verse 13. He who is devoid of wisdom despises his neighbor, but a man of understanding holds his peace. A talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. You know, we would all do well at times in our lives to just keep our mouth shut, hold our peace. I don't know what it is about human nature that causes some people to feel the need that they've got to tell somebody something. But as we see here, a man of understanding holds his peace. He knows when to keep his or her mouth shut and not share things or reveal things. Again, it says the talebearer reveals secrets, but the one who is of faithful spirit conceals a matter. You know, think about that for a moment. Even if it's true about somebody, out of love for that person, why repeat it? Right? So maybe they did something that was a mistake. What is the point in repeating it? If you love them, give them a chance. You know, just, yeah, you could go around saying, well, every word I've said is absolutely true. I can prove it. But is it of any profit, any benefit? Does it show any love? Here in Proverbs, well, let's go Proverbs 20 since we're here. Notice also Proverbs 20, verse 19. Because we see that these talebearers, as they're called, just can't keep their mouth shut. Proverbs 20, verse 19. He goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. You know, the thing my wife and I, you know, we had a period of time in a congregation we grew up in, a group that I would call them gossips. I mean, they had to know everything going on. And the only way that they could get any consolation of feeling good about they knew something was they had to tell you. So that way, once you learned it, then you would know that they knew it first, right? Now, think about it. Think it through, right? So you know something that nobody else knows, and you want to get credit for knowing it first. You got to tell somebody, right? So that they go, oh, yeah, that person knew it first because I heard it from them. That's kind of the seed or the root, I think, in people that are gossips. It's so important to them that you know that they know a secret. Right? It's just, for whatever reason, I can't figure it out. But it's just they need you to know that they know something that nobody else knows. And so the only way they can get that recognition for that is they got to tell somebody. And so that's what starts this whole thing of gossiping. And then I remember there was one point, a situation in our congregation where like everybody knew something, but nobody was telling anybody else because nobody was supposed to know, but everybody knew. It's like, this is crazy. Like, because once somebody finds out, oh yeah, I knew that. It's pretty soon you find out everybody knew, but nobody was telling each other because nobody was supposed to know. So everybody was telling everybody something that nobody was supposed to tell anybody. A bunch of gossips. Just a bunch of gossips. A gossiper is a person who has private or privileged information about people, and they proceed to reveal that information to those that have no business knowing it. No business knowing it. But they just somehow feel like, I got to tell you this, okay? Why? You know, it's interesting, you know, how many of us have ever, when somebody starts to say something, stop and say, wait, why are you telling me this? Why are you telling me this? Like, what is it going to change in my life knowing what you're about to say about, we don't have a Dave here, do you? Pick a name, Dave. Why are you telling me this? Well, I just you should know. Why? Why should I know? Right, so we all can do our part in stopping gossips by cutting them off and saying, look, I don't know that I need to know whatever it is you're about to say. You know, gossip is distinguished from merely sharing information, right? Because sometimes they deceive themselves into feeling like they're sharing you some important information. And the way you can tell the difference between a gossip and someone who's sharing information is, first of all, motivation. Usually the goal of a gossip is that they want you to know that they know something. That's really their motivation. It's really not about the person they're talking about or the circumstance or even you. They just want recognition for knowing a secret. It's, I'm in the know. We used to have, this one just popped in my head. I remember my wife telling a story of a situation of somebody that always made a point of letting them know, I know who's speaking tomorrow. Because they would find out who was going to be given the message the next day at services. And it's like, so what? But like they had to make a big deal of saying that all the time. You know, I solved it by we just published it, right? Everybody knows, right? Probably makes those kind of people really upset. Because now they don't know anything that nobody else knows, right? But that, you know, this goes again. That goes years back in the area we were growing up. But this person, it was a big deal to them to, you know, Friday call everybody and let them know that they know who's speaking tomorrow. Why? Like, why is that so important? So motivation is one of the things that helps to distinguish it. Why are they doing what they're doing, right? They want to be in the know. The life of that person, you know, that's hearing it is not changed in any way by knowing the gossip. They just know something now. It didn't help your life. So if you're the hearer of it, it hasn't improved your life. It hasn't changed your life at all. You just know that that person told you something that you didn't know 2 minutes ago. So, and the second thing is the kind of information that's shared. Gossipers usually are sharing the faults and failings of other people. It could be something embarrassing, something, you know, shameful. They're not praising, oh, I got to tell you this about so-and-so. Wow, they just did the most amazing, wonderful, you know, it's usually not that. It's usually something negative. It's tearing down someone's character or revealing something that happened in someone's life. Again, they're not praising or commending. They're usually tearing down. So motivation and the kind of information usually gives you an idea if this is gossip or if it's something that important that I need to know. Romans chapter 1. Again, all of this is just a result of the words that we use, what we say, how we say things. Sowing discord is one problem. Gossiping is another. In the book of Romans, Paul reveals the sinful and unlawful nature of mankind. Talks about God giving man over to his sinful nature. And notice what he includes in this list. Romans 1, verse 28. We'll begin at verse 28. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind, to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, right? Gossips. They're whisperers. I lost my place here. Verse 30, backbiters, haters of God, violent, they're proud, boasters, inventor of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. Gossips hang out with gossips, right? They just, and in fact, if you ever know a couple of gossips, it's just interesting watching them trying to one-up each other. Oh, yeah, I knew that first. I knew that Wednesday. I learned about it Tuesday night. Like, they can literally get that worked up over who knew what when. But all these things are listed as, you know, again, whisperers is one. Slanderers, they use the term backbiters, people that go around spreading these things. So from this section of Scripture, Romans 1, verse 28 through 32, we see a few things. First, just how serious the sin of gossip is, right? Those who practice it are deserving of death, right? Any of those things in that list, the end result is deserving of death. We also see that gossiping and slandering are different, right? Because they're two different things. A gossiper, a whisperer could even sometimes be telling the truth. But it's not of any benefit to repeat. A slanderer is quite deliberately trying to tear somebody down. I'll give you an example. Many, many years ago, I got a call in the middle of the night to go bail someone out of jail. They were at a bar in the evening, got in a bar fight, and ended up arrested. Went and bailed them out of jail. Never told a soul. What would it have done? What would it have accomplished to say anything to anybody? They knew what they did. It was whatever. It was a matter that they had to work themselves through. Why did anyone need to know? Okay. No one needed to know. They straightened the matter out, moved on with their life. It was not a big deal. It ended up being, quite frankly, a misunderstanding that got out of hand. What would have been the benefit of me the next day telling everybody I knew about, let me tell you what I did last night. I went and bailed so-and-so out of jail. Why? What is the point? That's just gossiping. It doesn't help that person out at all. How about parents? Would you want to run around and tell everybody, oh man, let me tell you what my knucklehead kid let yesterday. Man, not going to believe this. Right? When your kids are growing up and they make mistakes, sometimes they make some boneheaded mistakes. Right? Are you going to go tell everybody? Why? What good comes of that? That's being a gossip. Right? And so when these things happen, whether it's in your family or to a brother or sister in the faith or to anybody, do the right thing. If you can help them out in some manner, just help them and be done with it. You don't have to tell anybody. Don't toot your horn. There's no point in, gossiping about what happened, right? We want to restore that person, right? Love covers a multitude of sins. We've looked at that in the past, right? Doesn't mean you cover them up. It means because you love the person so much, you help them work through it, and you don't tell everybody, right? Proverbs 16, verse 28. As I said, the book of Proverbs, you could just do a whole sermon just out of the book of Proverbs. You go one after another. There's so many admonitions here recorded for us. Proverbs 16, verse 28. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer, a gossip, separates the best of friends. How many friendships have been ruined because of gossip? Because once it's said, and then... You can't like undo it because somebody says something and then the other person denies it, but now it's out there and it becomes this big scandal. People that are whisperers, that are gossips, they really don't do anything but just stir up a lot of trouble, anger, bitterness, strife, hurt feelings. They're not bridge builders. They're not helping in friendships. And as I said, some people just thrive on this. They look for opportunities to tear people down. I don't know why. We could probably speculate, but I'm not going to go there. But it almost becomes an addiction. Some people who just can't keep a secret. You probably have people that in your life that they're the last person I'm going to tell. Or if I want everybody to know, they're the first person I'm going to tell. It works both ways. Usually, though, these people, if you do catch them doing this and you try to confront them, they'll usually deny it. They usually have excuses. Well, it's all true. Everything I'm saying is true. Yeah. So, unfortunately, most people that tend to be this way can't ever admit they're wrong, and they can't seem to change. It's unfortunate. You would hope that they would. Proverbs 18, while we're here, verse 8, this is also repeated in Proverbs 26, 22, but we won't go there. Proverbs 18:8, the words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. Right? The King James Version uses wounds in place of tasty trifles. Some translations use dainty morsels or choice morsels. All of these are used to indicate the veracity with which some people can't wait to consume the gossip. They can't get enough of it. They want to hear all the juicy tidbits of what's going on. Miriam, well, I'm getting ahead of myself, I think. Yeah, so we're done there. Let's go to the next one. Euphemisms, right? So we've talked about sowing discord. We've talked about gossip. Let's talk about euphemisms, right? Specifically those euphemisms that violate the spirit and intent of the third commandment, right? This is a problem in the church as much as it is in our society. Merriam-Webster's dictionary, the word euphemism, the substitution of an agreeable or inoffensive expression for one that may offend or suggest something unpleasant. Euphemism derives its word from the Greek word euphemos, which means auspicious or sounding good. The first part of euphemos is the eu, meaning well, and the second part, phemē, is speech, right? So well-spoken or well-stated or good-sounding, right? So a euphemism is a well-sounding, good, you know, better than the offensive or, as it says, unpleasant term. Some euphemisms aren't wrong. For example, instead of saying my dog died, somebody would say my dog passed away. That's a euphemism. Nothing wrong with that. Or if you ever had to kill your dog, even saying that sounds horrible, right? What do we say? We had him put down. We had to have our dog put to sleep. Nobody's ever said, oh yeah, we killed our dog. Had to take him Tuesday to the vet, killed the dog. Right? We just, that, just even saying it around, it's like, ooh. So some euphemisms we use are perfectly fine, right? And that's what a euphemism is. It's a softer sounding word for something that's a little harsher or, you know, more difficult. Those, again, are appropriate euphemisms. There are many, though, that, and many in our society for sure, that violate the spirit of the third commandment. Let's go there, Exodus 20. Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. Because these are the ones we want to talk about. Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Empty, vanity, evil, ruin, uselessness, all translation of that word vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. You know, again, additional definitions of that word vain. Again, I mentioned emptiness, vanity, evil, ruin, deception, worthless, without result, fraudulently. So again, it means deceitfully or lying or a falsehood. You know. This word for vain here, it's also translated over in the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy chapter 5, where it says, you shall not bear false witness, uses the same word in that occasion over there. But people in our society used to know, and they used to honor God in the sense that they would not openly blaspheme God's name. That was a long time ago, right? Seems like a long time ago. And so they invented words that sounded similar, thinking somehow that was better. At least we're not saying the bad word, so we'll create a euphemism. Common ones that we see going on in our society today, I even felt guilty saying these, right? So I prayed about it this morning. I said, God forgive me, but I got to say what they are. But words like gosh and golly and oh my, fill in the blank, are euphemisms. Right? In our neighborhood, we got a couple kids that run around with the, oh my God, to the point where it's like, I'm going to go out there and just tell them, shut up. And another one now with texting is OMG, 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 OMG. It means the same thing, right? That's what it means. Again, this is common in our world today. This commandment is probably violated multiple times a day. Just like I said, I think about just kids in our neighborhood, how many times I hear people spouting off that, oh my, you know, or even worse, euphemisms. Other ones are euphemisms for Jesus Christ or Christ. You know, how many people get mad and they'll, you know, they'll just scream out, Jesus Christ, right? They're not. Do you think they're really calling on God to help intervene in a trial that they're having? Absolutely not. They're using the name, vainly empty, void of any meaning, They're just spewing it out. And that's a violation of that commandment. Other variations of that euphemism, or euphemisms that they use in place of saying Jesus Christ or Christ, are G's, G's, Jeepers, Creepers. Jiminy Cricket was one of those that was used because JC, so they just Jiminy Cricket. So, so we have a Disney character named after one, right? So, these are all euphemisms, right? They're replacing God's name, right? They're still taking it in vain, empty, falsely, but just inserting some other nicer sounding word. So it doesn't sound so bad that they're actually using his name. Another common euphemism in our society today is putting the word holy in front of something, right? Holy cow. Cows aren't holy, right? The things that are holy have God's active presence in them. To declare holy cow is, again, you're violating what God wants us to show, and that is respect and reverence for who God is. Cows aren't holy. Another one that really gets me mad is, I won't say it, the holy body excrement, right? People will say that one. You talk about, you put two words together that couldn't be any more vile, put those two together, right? But again, this is the world we live in. You know, the purpose of the third commandment is not merely to stop us from improperly using God's name. It is to teach us that his name is holy. It's to be revered. It's not just a word to be thrown around without any intent or any purpose. Proverbs chapter 10. We should never diminish it down to just useless euphemisms. And I would probably say this is maybe one of the hardest things that people in the church struggle with, because it is such a part of some of these words, like G or G's, you know, just people say them, right? And it's I think it's something we should all be conscious about. We should strive to do better at. Proverbs 10, verse 19. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. So here's another one of those admonitions to watch what we say, right? Restrain our lips. Be careful of the words that we use. It's the 111th Psalm. Let's go to Psalm 111. You know, we need to remember in showing respect to God that his name is holy. Saying one of his names, even a euphemism for God, when we're upset or when we're angry, does not honor God. Neither does using his name or euphemisms when we're not really thinking about him. We're just blurting things out because we're upset, right? I hit my thumb with a hammer, so I'm going to scream out, right, Jesus Christ's name. Why? Am I asking for him to intervene? Am I asking him to correct my attitude? Or am I just blurting it out vainly without even thinking? 111th Psalm, verse 9. Psalm 111, verse 9. He has sent redemption to his people. He has commanded his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments. His praise endures forever. And so again, holy and awesome is his name. Right? And all those who do his commandments, it says, have a good understanding. And so far we've looked at sowing discord, gossip, and euphemisms. Let's also, we have a little time left, look at the ninth commandment. Let's go to Exodus 20, verse 16. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Exodus 20, verse 16. Again, another use or misuse of our tongue, our words, the things that we say. In Exodus chapter 20, and verse 16, pretty straightforward. I already said it. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. We have a tendency, certainly when we teach our children, you know, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not lie. It does not say thou shalt not lie. It says you shall not bear false witness. And lying is merely one way that we violate that commandment. Right? Lying is probably the most obvious way of bearing false witness. You flat out tell a lie. But if we only limit it to that, then we fall short. Because it's more common for people to violate this commandment by maybe not telling all the truth, going to withhold a few details. You have bore false witness because you didn't tell all the truth. But I didn't lie. No, you didn't lie. Still violated the commandment. Or another one of my favorite ones to bring up in covering this topic is stating innuendos, right, that mislead people, right? An innuendo, you know, you didn't say something about someone, but you kind of implied something about somebody. You bore false witness, right? It can also be repeating something you heard without absolute fact of it being true. So you've now lied about something, maybe not knowingly, but you perpetuated something that's a lie. Or making a statement with that intent to create a false impression. It's when somebody does something like, well, if you knew what I knew about so-and-so, you might have a different opinion. And you walk away going, oh, there's something about so-and-so that they know that. Or maybe it's phrased this way. Did you hear what happened to so-and-so? Well, forget I said anything. Just not forget it. What did you just do, right? You have bore false witness. You have now, that person walks away going, there's something about so-and-so that, you know, that person knows, but they didn't tell me. All of those violate the spirit and intent of the commandment without even lying. Lying is just the obvious one. It goes back to the words that we're using, how we're using them. What is the intent? What is the motivation? And what is the result in the hearer? So what does God, what does he expect from us, right? Words matter to God, right? And so they should matter to us as well. So what does he expect from us? Matthew chapter 12. Because whether it's sowing discord, gossiping, using euphemisms, bearing false witness, God is going to hold us accountable. And my point of this is that we would all do better. Matthew chapter 12, verse 33. It says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. It's talking about trees being known by its fruit, for a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you, verse 36, that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Boom. There it is. Every word that proceeds out of our mouth will be held accountable for. And so as we go over these topics of discord and gossiping and euphemisms and bearing false witness, we should be holding ourselves to a much higher standard. God's word, as I said in the beginning of the sermon, is full of admonitions to us about how to use our words, and even warnings for when we misuse our words. Notice Proverbs 21, verse 23. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 23. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. So we need to guard our speech, choose our words very carefully. We all need to surrender any natural desire, you know, to violate those things that we looked at by following what the Bible tells us. Keep our mouth shut. Unless it's necessary, right, and it's relevant and appropriate, it probably doesn't need to be repeated. You know, there's things that will come to me in my role as a minister that I don't even share with my wife. It's not necessary. There's no reason to. Right? And I even tell that with people when they're counseling with me. I tell them, look, don't walk up to my wife and talk, because like I don't share anything with her. You know, if there's something I think she can help me with, I'll ask your permission if I can share this with my wife. But people come in confidence. I have to respect that confidence and maintain that. So the easiest way to do that is I don't tell anybody, not even my wife. And then she doesn't have to be burdened with it. And it's that way, if it gets out, you know how I got out. It's me. Right? So that keeps it pretty simple. But we all need to learn that, right? About if it's not necessary or appropriate, what do I need to repeat it at all? What is the point? How does this benefit the hearer? Proverbs 8 tells us when we speak, these are some things that should describe our speech. Proverbs 8, beginning verse 6. Because again, what can we focus on? Like, so we know what we shouldn't be doing, so how do we mentally focus on what we should do or what we can do? Proverbs 8, verse 6. Listen, for I will speak of excellent things, and from the opening of my lips will come right things. For my mouth will speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. Verse 8, Proverbs 8, all the words of my mouth are with righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverse is in them. They are all plain to him who understands and right to those who find knowledge. Again, these are words that should describe our speech. 2 Timothy chapter 2, Paul's letter to Timothy. He told Timothy to remind the brethren to not strive about words to no profit. 2 Timothy chapter 2. This ties into what Mr. Wilson and I were chatting about before services. It's probably why I brought it up, because it was on my mind. It was in my sermon notes. 2 Timothy 2, verse 14. It says, remind them of these things, charging them before the Lord, not to strive about words to no profit, to the ruin of the hearers. Right? You may be totally fine with a topic. The other person may not be able to handle it. You need wisdom and discernment. You don't share every topic with everybody for their sake. Right? That's where our spiritual maturity comes in. Verse 16, but shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more and more ungodliness. So again, we all need to be careful what we're sharing with one another to make sure that we're not inadvertently, you know, becoming a stumbling block for somebody. Right? Something we all need to be careful of. You know, one of my favorite quotes when I talk about the use of the tongue and the words that we use is this quote. I don't even remember where I found it. I think it was in a Christianity Today article. Words are like fire. They can warm your house or burn it to the ground. I love that quote. They can warm your house or burn it to the ground. It just depends on how we use our words. So notice what Paul wrote to the church in Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 4. Let's begin to wrap this up. Ephesians chapter 4. He spoke in verse 15 about speaking the truth in love. We're going to drop down to verse 25. Ephesians 4, verse 25. Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry, do not sin, do not let the sun go down in your wrath, nor give place to the devil. Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. Verse 29, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. That might be a good question to ask ourselves before we share something, right? Is it going to edify, right? Is it going to impart grace to the one hearing? Or do I care? I just want to say something because I just want to say it. You know, we should be thinking about how it will affect the hearer. The word for corrupt there is rotten, worthless, bad, or corrupt, right? And he even says that, don't let those rotten, corrupt words proceed out of your mouth, but what's good for the necessary edification. What's best for the hearer? Do they need to know what I feel I want to say? Verse 30, and do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Verse 31, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. Those words, you can look them up later. The words for, let me just continue here. Let's go into chapter 5. Be imitators of God as dear children. Walk in love as Christ also loved us, giving himself as an offering. He then begins a list. But fornication, uncleanness, covetousness, let it not be named among you as fitting for the saints. Neither filthiness or foolish talking. That word for foolish talking literally means speaking foolishly or a type of speech that betrays a person as being a fool. Right? He says, don't speak foolishly. Nor coarse jesting. Right? You can look up jesting if you'd like. These are mischief makers that Paul's probably most likely referring to those that are scoffers or sneerers that are always just, mocking things and jeering at things. He goes on to say, for this you know that these individuals, fornicators, unclean persons, nor covetous man who is an idolater, has any inheritance of the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. So this is speaking to you as the hearer. If a gossiper is coming to you with empty words, this is on you, right? Let no one deceive you with empty words. Therefore, verse 7, do not be partakers with them. Oh, how this could all stop if we all just said, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Right? That would really put a quick end to all of this. A little further down in chapter 5, verse 19, tells us how we should interact. Speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another in the fear of God. You know, as I said a lot over the last probably year and a half or two, a principal reason for us coming together on the Sabbath is not to strive or contend over words to no profit, as we read. But as we know from Hebrews 10:24, that we would come together and stir up love and good works, right? That's why we don't forsake assembling together, that we would stir up love and good works. Our words do matter. Proverbs 16:24, I'll read to you, it says, again, Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. I want to end in Colossians 4, verse 6. Colossians 4, verse 6. Colossians chapter 4. Verse 6, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each other. Let's spend our time together, whenever we're together, cultivating an environment where seldom is heard a discouraging word.